Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. That song means our friends from the Carpenter-St. Croix Valley Nature Center are in the house, and we are thrilled to see Kendall Chergowski. She is here to tell us about some nice winter things. Great to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you, too. Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. Kendall, first of all, how have you been?
Oh, good. We've still been a little busy over at the Nature Center.
But you guys had a couple of days off because I know the 361
days a year.
So you had a couple of them off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we basically have to force people at the center to take time off.
Well, because you can't just be taking time off because you have pets.
Yeah,
they called?
Ambassadors.
Ambassadors.
Yeah. You have hungry mouths.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. You have mouths to feed over there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
But it was just great
to
have some downtime.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But, you know, we're all back in the office ready to go again. I was so excited when everyone was back because over the holidays, you know, if there's not anything to do, we all start to go stir crazy. So we're all back to work. But
well, I know that the Three Kings finally came so we can get rid of our Christmas tree.
Yes.
And I couldn't be happier.
Why? Did you have a real tree this year?
No, but, you know, it's just kind of fun to put stuff away. But when you do have a real tree, you kind of think, how am I going to dispose of it?
Oh, yeah. So
is that something that we should know about?
Yeah, Christmas tree disposal is sometimes more complicated than people think it is, especially if you're talking about artificial trees. You know, it's up for every family to weigh the decision between getting an artificial tree and a real tree. Both of them, if you're thinking about the environment, have different costs, have different, you know, benefits. Obviously, an artificial tree, you can reuse it over and over again.
So. Sure. Mm-hmm. But the environmental cost at the end of its life is more substantial, right?
Well, it honestly almost depends.
Tell me more.
Yeah, if you get, I think it's 5 to 20 years. It's a pretty wide range depending on your tree. But if you get 5 to 20 years use out of your artificial tree, it actually might end up being more sustainable than your farmed tree, your cut down tree.
Well, I would think that a cut down tree would just dissolve back into the earth
it
or something.
Absolutely does. If you're talking about when you're disposing of your tree and, you know, cutting down your tree, most trees come from tree farms, right? So it's not like you're going out in the wilderness and just chopping down a tree willy-nilly. There are certainly places where you can do that, but most people get their trees from like tree farms. And a lot of tree farms will plant two trees for every tree that you take from it. So it is actually a really sustainable practice for the most part.
How long does it take for our Christmas tree to grow? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. For it to be ready.
Yes.
For your ripe Christmas tree. It can take up to 7
Kendall,
years.
Kendall, I love it that you've learned my language.
Yeah, this isn't my first rodeo. This is the fourth time I've been here.
So 7 years it can take?
About 7 years. So when you think about it, let's say you buy, you know, you get a new real Christmas tree every year for 10 years. That's 70 years worth of tree, you know?
That's true.
Yeah. So when you're weighing your environmental cost, you know, you have to factor in, your tree takes water to grow. So you have to factor in the fact that you've used all that water. You have to factor in, which Christmas trees are nice. They don't take a lot of pesticides or anything. To manage them, but you know, those are things you should all consider.
Okay.
But for Christmas tree removal or disposal, that's the real tree is the way to go for sure. So in the Hastings area, and I think in most areas in Minnesota, you can actually, it's either a small fee or...
They come and get it.
Yeah, they'll come and pick it up, and instead of bringing it to a landfill, they'll mulch it.
Oh. Right?
And then that mulch sometimes for some communities is actually free. So if you bring your Christmas tree in, you can get mulch out of it. You can get it for
your yard. It might not be your same tree.
Right.
But it's all good.
Yeah, like community mulch. So I know there are some communities that do that. I was researching. Some of this stuff could be hard to find. So they
mulch everything, the needles and stuff too?
That's right. As long as there's no tinsel or like lights left on your tree, yeah, they can totally mulch the tree.
And do you think that is what happens around here?
I believe so. I was looking into it just in like the Hastings area or Washington County general. So there is a program set up to mulch trees. I think it's usually $5 or $6. They can also do other things too, like wreaths and stuff. I thought that was cute. They can mulch your wreaths if you had them on your door.
Sure.
So
then what with the mulch? It just goes back into the earth or something?
You can use that for some places I know, especially out east, will actually use them for hiking trails as well. So, you know, you mulch your hiking trail to make it a nice path for people to walk on. But otherwise, you know, the tree is just, it's good. It's like wood chips, right? You can put your wood chips down for your garden.
I love it. Mm-hmm. What else should we know about this topic?
Oh, you know, one of my favorite things that actually this was on the news pretty recently, you might have seen it, is one of the ways to dispose of your Christmas tree is feeding it to goats.
Okay, what?
Did you hear about this at all?
I did not.
Oh, in some
your
communities.
Your whole tree?
Yeah, so the whole tree. So you know how sheep, cows, animals like those are grazers, so
yes.
A lot of times they'll eat like grass. So goats are more like deer, and they will like pick off pieces of bark, you know. And
didn't know that.
Yeah, so the bark on the trees is actually really good for goats. It acts as like a natural dewormer. So like you'd give your dog can't eat the tree, but a goat sure can. And so it'll worm the animals, and it's got a lot of good like vitamins in it for the animal. So
how do you get your goat to eat?
They'll
a tree.
Eat it. They'll snack on it. I was reading there was one farm that I think they got like 20 trees one year, and then the next year they got like 150 trees, and the goats will just go to town.
Stop
on them.
It.
Yep. How cute is that? Just feed your Christmas tree to a goat. How festive.
So would the same thing happen if we lived in the country and we could throw our tree out in the backyard? Would deer come and eat it?
You know, they would probably eat a bit of it. They're browsers, not like internet, but like they like to eat small twigs and stuff. So if it's a large tree especially, you know, it might be more beneficial for it to be broken down for them. But yeah, there are all kinds of animals that will be using stuff like that. So
amazing. Mm-hmm. Should we cut it into small parts?
You know, I don't know for sure if I would recommend just like throwing it out behind your house, because
okay.
It would still take some time. But if there's a goat farm in your area, you should absolutely ask any local people with goats whether they'd like your tree. You know?
Have you ever thought about getting goats at the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center?
I think we've borrowed goats before. I remember we do our preschool programs with children.
Sure.
And I know one spring we had baby animals for the kids, so we borrowed some goats. I don't remember exactly where we borrowed them from.
Because they need to be fenced. They'll run away, right?
Yeah. Or,
okay.
Yeah, most animals like that. They get spooked pretty easily too.
Sure.
So.
And you're kind of just open air.
Yeah. And you know, animals like that do like browse and graze can be kind of detrimental to your grass cover and stuff, especially when you get to larger animals with hooves. You know, out east, a lot of the time, deer are even seen as pest animals because of the amount of browsing and grazing they do.
But you have a lot of deer.
We do, but we do. You'll notice the only place on our nature center that really has a fence is our apple orchard. And we have a really large
yes.
fence around it. That was because of a deer problem. We planted some new trees, and over the winter, it was something like 100 new trees. Over the winter, those deer just came in and demolished them.
They ate the trees.
They ate all the new growth on the trees, and they just all died. So,
oh my God.
So maybe not.
So what else should we know about trees, Christmas trees?
I mean, I think the most important thing to think about is weigh your own options. People tend to be hung up on, you know, is an artificial one better, or is a like real tree better? But either way, you know, the holidays are a pretty spendy time for carbon footprint anyway, with all the traveling people do and with all the shopping. So whatever works in your house.
Oh, that's a nice attitude. Thanks,
yeah,
Kendall.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to say.
Yeah.
You brought some interesting looking.
I
have no idea what. They look like bungee cords or something to me.
They are kind of bungee-y. So we can switch gears here because, you know, it's January. And
January.
We can be done talking about Christmas trees. We can look ahead, but we still do have a lot of winter left, unfortunately.
I know.
January is like on average the coldest month.
And February is right behind it.
Yeah. But January on average. Do you remember last year? Remember that polar vortex? -50?
Didn't we have have 8 days where there was no school or something crazy?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's nice out like it is today, and when it's nice out like it will be the next couple of days, even though it's a little chilly, we have all sorts of things that we can do outside. So what I brought with, not to keep you in suspense for this long, but I brought with some yak tracks. So you maybe heard of these before.
How is it spelled?
Yak, like the animal, Y-A-K, and then tracks, like a footprint, tracks. So, yeah, these are just some nice almost bungees that you can put on the bottom of your boot. So if you're worried about slipping on the ice, you know, yaks are a big animal that doesn't slip much on the ice.
So is this in lieu of boots?
No, well, so if you want some extra traction, it's almost like...
Because you can put them on shoes,
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah, you could. So if you're crossing some treacherous terrain, if you have like an icy... I don't know if those would fit on your heels, though, no. So maybe a tennis shoe? The nice thing is they're springy, so they can fit over a lot of sizes of shoe. But if there's a heel, I don't know how well they work.
So you fit them over your shoe, mm-hmm. and then you can really walk on ice and anything?
A bit, you know, within reason.
Okay.
You know. But, you know, if you're interested in walking over snow and ice, these aren't going to keep you from sinking into the snow, which is where we go for snowshoes instead.
Okay.
So I'm segueing into snowshoes. I like talking about snowshoes.
Do they really work?
They do. Yeah, absolutely. They work by spreading out your weight over a larger surface area.
Okay.
So
I'm all for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. The old like wives' tale about it and is snowshoe hares, right? Are like bunnies. They have those big feet and that keeps them from sinking into the snow. So supposedly. And I mean, supposedly, like, we know this for sure. They were first invented, like, 4,000 years ago in Central Asia. But then, you know, we know all the indigenous communities that lived in the, you know, in North America also have their own varieties of snowshoes. Like, the Ojibwe snowshoes, we have a lot of those.
Okay.
At Carpenter. So, yeah.
So, snowshoeing is something that people can do all year, or not all year, but all winter at the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center.
All winter, but sort of snow dependent. So if there's not more than six inches or more of snow, it can be bad for the bindings on the snowshoes to actually be on the ground. So that would be a time when you might want to opt for like something lighter, like a yak track.
Do we have to bring our own snowshoes?
Not at all.
Tell me more.
Carpenter will rent you some snowshoes. It's $5 for 2 hours rental.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
Yeah, it really is. And we have a lot of varieties of sizes. We actually just received a grant that I wrote us for, haha.
Congratulations.
For to get us some new like youth size snowshoes. So if you want to bring the kids, that's totally something you can do too. But it's $5 for 2 hours, or if you're a friend of CNC, if you're a member, they're free.
So when you go snowshoeing, mm-hmm. you don't stay on the path, because that's the whole point.
So when you go snowshoeing, you don't stay on the path. At least you don't want to be anywhere where there's pavement, because that can be really bad. Even for the newer snowshoes, they almost have like a cleat-like bottom, so it can be bad for them. But you do sort of, if you're walking with a lot of people, want to stay in a line. And the reason for that is because you don't want to disturb any of the areas where you might find animals, right?
Oh, okay.
So, but, you know.
Where is that?
A lot of places.
Okay.
You know,
how will we know?
You'll see some tracks on the snow. That's my favorite part about snowshoeing, is seeing animal tracks. Because there are some really elusive animals that you might not otherwise see, but you can tell that they've been there because of the tracks they leave behind
in
the snow.
Tell me more.
So, like, I mean, they're cool animals, not anything gross. Like bobcats.
What?
Yeah, we don't get as many of them around here, but I know
you have bobcats over at the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature
Center? I have never seen any tracks for them. I don't know if we have them in the area, but slightly north of here, I know more in central Minnesota, I've seen bobcats before. But even if you don't see them, they're very shy. You might see their tracks. So the difference between like a bobcat track and a dog track is you're not going to see any like claw marks with your bobcat track.
Okay. And isn't it big?
They're kind of big. Yeah, they got really floofy feet. Real cute.
Oh my gosh.
So you probably won't be able to make out, like if you're looking for tracks, you won't be able to make out.
Do you follow tracks?
You totally can. I do this on my day-to-day, but that's like my job. So if you do it through your parking lot, it might be weird.
Can you and I go sometime? That would be
absolutely
so fun. Because I think I might be a little bit nervous to go looking for animals myself.
We do have some snowshoe hikes coming up if you're interested. Okay. Let me look. I don't want to get any dates wrong. Yeah, we have moonlight snowshoe hikes. So that would be, we have one coming up on the 10th of January. And then
can we
another
bring
one.
Flashlights?
It won't be quite dark enough that you'll need a flashlight, but it won't be that dark. Well, it might be kind of dark. We usually go at like 6 p.m.
That's dark.
It gets dark, but it's going to get lighter.
And no one's going to sneak up on us?
No.
Okay.
What we'll be doing is we'll be looking for tracks of, you know, there's no real critters out there that are going to hurt you.
What about this bobcat thing you were
bobcats
just...
Bobcats are so shy, and we don't have them as much
What do you mean
here.
They're shy?
They're very shy. They're elusive. If they hear people around, then they'll make themselves scarce. But we might see some tracks from some waddlers.
Waddlers
are animals like opossums and skunks, so you can look at their tracks. They kind of waddle back and forth.
I don't care to see them either.
Oh, but they're so cute. Opossums are my favorite.
So you can see, so their tracks, part of their, you probably see part of their body too.
Yeah.
Don't they wobble
the animal,
that much?
Yeah. Depending on the animal, especially like otters, you'll see them dragging a tail. Or for smaller animals like voles, you'll find the tail mark in between. And then you have long leggers. That's animals like deer, coyotes. So their tracks are going
to
be, coyotes scare people. Their tracks are going to be in a straight line almost because
what do you mean?
They'll put their foot into the same spot. So their front left leg, they'll put their back left leg in the same hole. So you'll really only see two.
Don't they have to really think about that?
Their brains are hardwired in a way that it just makes it natural.
Oh,
right?
My gosh.
Yeah.
We can't even do that as people.
Yeah, right. I know.
When you try to retrace your steps out to the mailbox. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I was walking through the snow since I live, you know, I live a hike away from my work, and I was walking through the snow thinking to myself, what kind of walkers are people? Like, I think we're waddlers. Is what I'm like. So you got waddlers, you have long leggers, and then you have hoppers. So like
bunnies,
squirrels.
Sure. So, and what's the difference? How can you tell a hopper?
Hoppers are going to have, they're going to have their little like back feet and their front feet almost in like a square a lot of the time.
Oh,
so
okay.
Squirrels make a square really easy.
Didn't
to remember.
Know that. Okay.
Yep. So if you see, because you know they hop along, and then bunnies usually make a triangle shape. So you'll have the back feet and then the two front feet. So the back feet are actually pointing to the direction where they're going.
Okay.
So it might look backwards, but you just trust me on this one.
This is fascinating.
Yeah.
So how will we sign up for this, please?
You can give us a call at Carpenter Nature Center.
How long are these hikes?
Usually about 2 hours. The best part about the moonlight snowshoe hikes, they're usually for grown-ups only, but we will usually warm up with cider and popcorn at the end. So we'll come back inside and we'll warm up and talk about what we saw. But they're a great deal. So I believe it is $12. I'm not sure for sure on that, but that covers the cost of snowshoe rental, and it covers the cost of your cider. If you have your own snowshoes, you can of course bring them, and anytime you have your own snowshoes, you can bring them to Carpenter and hike around anytime. But
should we be quiet on this?
Yes. So it will usually be a nice, quiet, like relaxing event. We could also be listening for owls too. People love listening for owls. You can usually hear them calling around that time of night.
Oh my gosh.
So 'tis the season for owl calls.
You know, it sounds really exciting.
Yeah.
So how many of these are you having?
We have one coming up on the 10th. So I believe that is this coming weekend. And then we have another one on February 7th. We also have all kinds of other hikes. We have owl specific hikes. So if that really piques your interest, like I want to hear some owls, we have owl prowls. And we have one of those on January 24th and one on February 21st.
So, love it.
Yeah. Those ones we don't use snowshoes for because we have to be extra quiet.
Oh, you do?
It's going to be noisy. Yeah.
So you stay on the pavement?
For the most, you should wear boots. You know, always dress for the weather, no matter what you're doing.
I forgot about boots.
I always start to sweat when I'm snowshoeing, though. It gets warm. Oh, you're doing a lot of work.
That is very hard. It's great exercise. Oh, Kendall, great to see you.
You're
making
too.
The most of winter. Good for you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much.
Thanks for all your tips and your insights. And we hope that we can come out and join you on some of these outdoor activities. So fun. Kendall Trugowski with the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center. And we are grateful that she came in today. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings. Wee-dee-dee-dee. 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 Wee-dee-dee-dee.